Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
To my successor, whoever he or she may be. Number one, stay close to the Americans, stick up for the Ukrainians, stick up for freedom and democracy everywhere.
Politics in general has taken total leave of its senses.
Changing one man at the top of the Tory party won't make any difference. It won't fix the problems. Let's have a fresh start for Britain. Let's have a real change of government.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics, your daily guide to the corridors of power. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Coming up on today's programme:
the battle over energy bills heats up. Keir Starmer calls for a price cap freeze fuelled by a bigger windfall tax on oil and gas profits.
Plus, could the ongoing energy price crisis force a chain reaction, see what I did there, that leads to more nuclear power plants? We'll be getting the thoughts of Tom Greatrex, the CEO of the UK's Nuclear Industry Association.
But first, Stephen, are you relieved that the latest heatwave is coming to an end?
I cannot underestimate how relieved I am that this is coming to an end. I had one of those moments yesterday where I was out having lunch, sitting outside, and lovely warm day, and I was like, this is terrible. Like, I really cannot, I am not built for this. I am from Northwestern Europe, and I cannot deal with heat like this over a sustained period of time. And I'm sure that there's some big economic point we could make about, you know, the depressing effect on the economy. But quite frankly, I just want it to be cooler.
I'm one of those really annoying people who actually likes it.
Yeah, all right,
I've
fine.
I've had a lovely summer. It's been delightful. although I spent this weekend sheltering in Manchester where it was a cool 30 degrees. And it was 5 degrees cooler than down here.
Bammer. Okay, fine. I'll allow that. Fair enough. Well, while the summer heat is set to cool later today, there are thunderstorms forecast. Let's put a political metaphor in there for you. Joining us to discuss if Keir Starmer is going to be able to rain on the Tory leadership contest's parade is our EMEA government and economics correspondent Lizzie Burden and our political reporter Alex Wickham, who broke, of course, that story about the UK facing possible blackouts this winter. Lizzie, let's talk about this energy price cap freeze idea that Keir Starmer has come up with. What has he proposed?
So there's a rare day of cut through for Keir Starmer. He's dominating the UK newspapers this morning. He's been doing the broadcast rounds. I'll start with the windfall tax. He wants to continue the windfall tax on energy companies and use the money to freeze the energy price cap rise. That's what would have been the major contributor to inflation rising above 13% in the autumn, as the Bank of England's been projecting. And this is Starmer really responding to the criticism that he's not been taking advantage of the policy void left by the zombie government, because, of course, Boris Johnson's kind of a lame duck until September the 5th, when we know who the next Tory leader and Prime Minister is. So this will heap pressure on Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak to do more on energy. She's said that she won't introduce a new windfall tax. He says that he's open to it. But it's hard to resist when you've got the Times reporting today a YouGov poll showing that this policy is very popular among Conservative voters. It was originally a Labour policy when it was introduced. If the Conservatives steal Labour's clothes again, they're going to look like they're on the back foot.
Alex, this is fertile territory for the opposition, isn't it? It goes all the way back to Ed Miliband. Of course, he proposed the price cap, which was pinched by the Tories. So this really should be an easy win for Labour, shouldn't it?
It should be. And Keir Starmer has found it a little bit tricky. He has come under a bit of criticism. He's been on holiday for the last couple of weeks. Of course, all politicians are allowed a holiday, nothing wrong with that, but it has been slightly unfortunately timed, given that, as Lizzie was saying, this zombie government has allowed this opportunity to crop up for Labour to do something. Gordon Brown got in there, of course, the former Prime Minister, with his own proposal, quite, you know, sort of similar-ish sort of thing to this one, about scrapping the price cap rise. Liberal Democrat leader Ed Davey got in there first as well, so he can claim a small political win. However, it is true that today is the cut-through day for Keir Starmer. He has really set the standard now in terms of what the government will be expected to do by the public. Because if you're a voter, you see these headlines on, you know, it's running top of the BBC all day. It'll be there tonight as well. You're seeing, right, no price cap rise. That's what I want. And the government will have to meet that. And if it doesn't, voters will be asking why.
Lizzie, Labour have costed this plan. They're saying it's £29 billion. Is that a sort of a realistic price to put on it? Is this a sort of question that it's really that could go much, much, much higher?
Well, so if you break down that £29 billion, the Labour Party is going to increase the windfall tax on oil and gas companies, divert planned spending by the government, and then save on debt interest payments from lower inflation. Now, the Institute for Fiscal Studies has done some analysis of this, and the Telegraph seized on one of the lines from this analysis that says the saving on interest payments on the national debt is an illusion because inflation is going to increase unless these huge subsidies stay in place beyond 6 months. But then you've had the director of the IFS, Paul Johnson, weighing in and saying at least Labour's costed their plans. If you look at Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss, it's not exactly clear how they plan to fund their proposals.
Alex, I wonder in some ways, if the numbers don't matter really, because 29 million, 29 billion, I think a lot of voters just see numbers. But as we head towards October, November, December, and these enormous bills, I just think a lot of households sort of want the government to make it go away. And if Labour looks like they have a plan for making it go away, in a way, you know, that's surely a win.
Absolutely. And that's the joy of being in opposition, isn't it? But I mean, Rishi Sunak, during this whole leadership contest, has struggled with this very thing of saying, oh, I'm the sensible one, I'm the one with the serious economic policies. But, you know, I've thought things through, I'm concerned about inflation, etc., etc. And Liz Truss comes up with a much more simplistic message of optimism, which may be unrealistic, but that's the thing that Conservative members want to hear. And it's a little bit the same with the wider public, I would imagine. They see these horrendous potential bill rises coming down the track. They need politicians to step in. That absolutely is an expectation, I think, among voters. You see it in all the polling, that it's just not realistic, and they want a COVID-style, furlough-style level of intervention. And that's what Keir Starmer essentially is offering today.
I mean, Alex, we've not been on together on the podcast before, but what I really want to ask you is whether Rishi Sunak can turn it round at this point. I mean, he seems to be winning the argument on energy, at least, if not on tax cuts. Is it possible that he could turn the tables in this race and win finally, because this is now the focus?
This is the fascinating question of this Tory leadership contest. The first few weeks of the contest were sort of, they were kind of all about tax cuts. That was the framing of the debate. And Liz Truss did really well and succeeded in setting the tone and setting the agenda of the debate around what she wanted to talk about. And that's what Conservative members, of course, like. They love a tax cut. Whether that's realistic or not in terms of the problems facing the country is another question. And only really in the last few days, perhaps the last week or so, has Rishi Sunak managed to get cost of living and energy bills to the top of the agenda, as they really should have been, because it is the main crisis facing the country. And only really then, with Liz Truss really failing to put any detail on what she would do if she becomes Prime Minister on cost of living and energy bills, has Sunak managed to make some inroads. And it is possible, it is just possible that might turn it around, but it all depends on how many Tory members have voted already, and that's the big unknown, the question that we just don't know. If, as we've seen some reports in some of the newspapers, half, two-thirds have voted already, that would really suggest that Truss has got it in the bag.
Alex, there's always a sort of a question of disconnect between a campaign and then after the election what has to happen in reality, but are either Liz or Rishi Sunak heading for essentially a massive dose of reality whoever takes over in number 10, and perhaps all of their carefully laid plans will need to be thrown out because there will be such public clamour to do more?
This is something that Tory MPs that I've been speaking to have become really concerned about in the last few days, which is Liz Truss says, I'm against handouts, as she puts it, I want to focus on tax cuts and quote conservative ways of doing things. And the reality is she's going to get into number 10 and she's going to sit down with the permanent secretaries and she's going to look at the books and it's going to be pretty clear that a massive intervention is required and that the tax cuts that she's talking about so far just simply won't be enough. And that means her first, the real problem is her first big decision as Prime Minister could be a massive U-turn on everything that she said in the Tory leadership campaign, which is going to go down pretty badly with Tory members. It's going to go down pretty badly with MPs. The public might be happy with the support that they end up getting, but it doesn't show her as a strong leader. All this Thatcher stuff about the ladies not for turning, well, that's going to be the public's first impression of her.
Turning straight away. Lizzie, how bad is the economic backdrop when the new leader takes over at the beginning of September? We've got some key data coming out this week, haven't we, which is going to shed a bit of light on the economic picture. It isn't that bleak, is it, yet, before these bills are hit?
Yep. Inflation approaching 5 times the Bank of England's target. The labour market extremely tight. It is bleak, and this is why the Bank of England has raised interest rates by a mammoth 50 basis points. It hasn't done that in its independent history before, and it's even saying that that is going to bring about a 5-quarter-long recession. You would hope that whoever is the next occupant of number 10 does a bit to reverse that. Liz Truss says that a recession isn't inevitable, but then you have all these warnings that her tax cuts would be inflationary and add to it. So, you know, we have economists on the programme on Bloomberg Daybreak every morning, and they just don't know what the outcome's going to be because, as I say, they haven't necessarily costed, the candidates haven't necessarily costed all the proposals, and we just don't know what's going to come when they're in office.
And one of the things that I find quite striking about those conversations is that, well, we hear politicians say, oh, no, the Bank of England is being too gloomy about the economic situation. It's hard to find an economist that doesn't say that at least it's almost as gloomy as the Bank of England is saying in their outlooks as well. Of course, that 5 quarters of recession being talked about.
And Bloomberg Economics says even if Liz Truss does £40 billion of tax cuts, the reduction in economic growth from 2022 to 2023 would still be 1.3%, not as big as the 2.1% the BOE is forecasting, but still a blow.
But the tight labour market is not entirely bad news, is it? It's good news if you're looking for a job.
It's good news if you're one of the high earners who can demand a big pay rise, but as Andrew Bailey, the BOE governor, has pointed out, if you're at the lower end of the spectrum, you don't have that bargaining power. But it does give ammo to the unions asking for bigger wage rises. If you can't get wage rises in a cost of living crisis, when can you?
Okay, Lizzie Burden, our EMEA economics and government correspondent, and Alex Wickham, our political reporter, thank you very much for joining us to talk through all of that.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at bloomberglive.com/AI/radio.
Well, nuclear power currently accounts for about 15% of the UK's energy supply, and there are plans to see that increase over the next decade. But with years-long lead-in times to build new plants, it's not something that can be scaled up quickly.
I've been speaking to Tom Greatrex, CEO of the UK's Nuclear Industry Association. He's also a former Labour MP and Shadow Energy Minister. He told us why he believes nuclear power is the solution to energy insecurity in the long term.
To get to a position where you have 20 to 25% of the power coming from nuclear, which is what the government's energy security strategy envisages, will be over about a period of 10 years. So this isn't going to be the answer to the immediate crisis, but it is the answer if you want to avoid having the situation we're having now, again in the future, where an over-reliance on fossil fuels and the volatility that comes from that puts not just the prices in significantly difficult position, but also our energy security and the way in which we're able to ensure we have supplies of energy that homes and businesses and public services all need.
What sort of investment is needed to ramp up nuclear in the UK?
We've got a number of sites. We've got a number of potential technologies to be able to be built, but what they all need, because nuclear power stations are capital intensive, you need almost all of the money associated with nuclear power stations in the construction part of the operation. Then they operate for probably 70, 80 years with a very low and predictable running cost. So it's billions of pounds of investment, but it's investment in critical infrastructure, which will last a very, very long time. And the fact that we have our current fleet that you referred to before, almost all of that is closing down in the next few years because it's come to the end of its life. Means we're going to be in a position where we're going to be more energy insecure than we currently are even today.
does that upfront investment need to come from public money?
Well, not necessarily. There are different ways of doing it. The government has, with cross-party support, put in place in legislation that's something called a regulated asset-based model for nuclear, the same model that's used for other infrastructure in other areas, which will help to reduce the cost of capital. There's a significant amount of interest in the investment community in nuclear power, and we're using that model in a way that wasn't the case under the previous model. I suspect there will probably be some public investment in those projects, but that's probably right because that makes the cost to consumers lower. And it is, of course, critical infrastructure that we need to avoid being in the situation we're currently in the future.
You mentioned that a lot of these plants are coming towards the end of their lives, the existing power plants in the UK that are nuclear. Hinkley B, of course, just closed. Two more scheduled to close in 2024. Do their lifetimes need to be extended further to stop the squeeze in the short term on supplies?
Well, these are power stations that have pretty much come to the end of their generating life. They've all had lifetime extensions. They've all gone for a lot longer than they're originally envisaged. So it may be possible to be able to get a little bit more out of them, but you're not going to have, as you've seen in other places, in other parts of the world, be able to sort of have 20 or 30 year lifetime extensions. So what we need to do to ensure we have that supply in the future is to get on and start the process of building, replacing that fleet and doing more than that fleet in terms of gigawatt capacity to be able to make sure we've got that proportion of 20-25% that we've been talking about.
What does the nuclear industry need to do to improve its image in terms of getting these plants on stream? We know, for example, we've had the many issues at the French reactors recently due to heating river temperatures and supply issues there. We've also had extremely long delays in bringing new plants on stream. Flamanville in northern France is 10 years behind schedule in building. Is there any way to make the nuclear industry more attractive for that long-term investing?
Well, investors that are looking at nuclear now can see three fundamentals. Firstly, is that you're providing secure and reliable and stable power, which is the backbone of any economy, and that is attractive. Secondly, they're long-lasting infrastructure assets that therefore bring with them long-term investor value. The third thing is that, as with other energy sources, the first ones you build take longer. The more you do it, if you have a program, as France did a generation ago, then you're able to do that efficiently and effectively, and you have the supply chain established. You're able to do more and do more effectively, rather than doing what we've done historically in this country, and we did in the early 90s. We build one and then stop, and then magically expect that the industry is going to be automatically there when there's a change of decision making 20 or 30 years later. That's the root of this. You know, we've got tremendous skills and capacity and capability in the UK nuclear industry, but it hasn't been focused on building new power stations until starting with Hinkley. And we've got to be able to build more than one and keep building them. And that comes from having certainty and clarity about what it is we're trying to do. And that's the thing that politicians are trying to grapple with at the moment. Probably too late. They should have made a lot of these decisions about 10 years ago, but we are where we are. We need to get on with it and do it properly now.
Where can those new plants be built? There are lots of communities who don't want a nuclear power station near them.
There's lots of communities that do want a nuclear power station near them. Communities where there have been previous nuclear power stations, you will find communities are very supportive because, firstly, they understand the realities of being part of a nuclear community, and as opposed to some of the things which are said by people who oppose it that aren't necessarily true. Secondly, because of the economic impact that they currently have. We have a lot of nuclear licensed sites in the UK that are suitable for large or SMR reactors. There are also a number of other industrial sites that have had previous or different types of power generation, coal-fired or gas-fired power stations, which could potentially be suitable. So there's not a shortage of sites, and there isn't a shortage of communities that would welcome that investment and welcome nuclear power stations in them. They're not going to be in, you know, every town or every location, but there are locations that are suitable and where they'll be welcomed.
I mentioned that you're a former shadow energy minister. I'm wondering what your view is on Keir Starmer's plans to extend windfall tax, freeze the price cap. Are your members worried that a windfall tax could hit them?
Well, it depends. You know, a windfall tax that is applied to where there have been significant unanticipated profits made is quite different to a blunt windfall tax on electricity generation, for example. And so it's about the detail of that. I mean, electricity generation, so nuclear power, for example, that's been currently part of the, is the cheapest electricity there currently is on the system at the moment, because that's coming from assets that are coming towards the end of their lives and so are paid for. So it's by far the cheapest electricity of all of it that's currently on the grid. And without it, the electricity price would be even higher. If there aren't any excess profits being made in that area, I think there's a difference between that and where you've got fossil fuel profits that have significantly increased because of the price issues that have happened in the fossil fuel market. So it's about the detail about how that's applied. But, you know, I don't envy any current politician in trying to do what they're trying to do at the moment to find ways of addressing what we all know is going to be a very difficult winter, both in terms of cost of energy, but probably in the availability of energy. And that's going to have significant impact, I think, on society as a whole.
So that was Tom Greatrex, CEO of the UK's Nuclear Industry Association, speaking to me a little bit earlier. Look, I think the key point to take away from this is that nuclear can be an interesting option for further down the line, but it's not something that can happen quickly. And that is the lesson of where we're seeing other nuclear power plants being built. So the current generation, what's going into Hinkley C, is what's called an EPR reaction, which is supposed to be the next generation of nuclear reactors. The first one of those only started producing power in Europe at the start of this year, after construction beginning in 2005. The one that I referenced during that interview, Flamanville in northern France, started construction in 2007, isn't supposed to start producing electricity until the start of next year, and it will take another month and potentially another year to get that on stream into actually the network in France as well. So these are long-term projects. The other thing that's happening in this area is the development of modular reactors. These are smaller ones that they would be able to put into an oil or gas-fired space. The idea being to use the same space to have a nuclear reactor there as well. But that technology still years and years off from being approved, and not something that's going to help in the short term. So if governments want to put investment in, they have to know they won't be yielding anything back to try and handle the immediate energy crisis.
Yeah, of course, those PVRs, as you say, still rather untested technology. Interesting to see how long that new plant in Suffolk just commissioned takes. That's only just been agreed. Quite controversial on the Suffolk coast there. Let's pivot from the energy costs to the inflation reading, which we're going to get to later on this week. Lizzie Burden is back in the studio. Now, Lizzie, we've got unemployment near a 50-year low, and we have that inflation number also coming out. What's the data we're looking ahead to this week?
So we're going to get jobs first, and we are expected to see this tight labour market continuing, the unemployment rate staying at 3.8% in the 3 months to June. On top of that, vacancies are at an all-time high. So really the question is, have we hit peak tightness in the labour market? You've seen the growth in jobs openings seeming to have slowed. People seem to be coming back to the workforce, actually, because they need the money to get through the cost of living crisis. So we're watching the jobs data, and then we'll get the inflation numbers. It's expected to hit 9.8%, up from 9.4%, so getting towards five times the Bank of England's target. But more interesting than the headline figure will be how much inflation has spread beyond the core, beyond food and energy, and into services, because that would indicate that inflation is likely to be more longer lasting. And remember, this isn't even the peak. We're headed towards more than 13% in October, if the Bank of England's right, when energy bills are set to rise again. And then finally, we get retail sales figures on Friday. And again, it'd be interesting to see how much the cost of living crisis is biting into spending, but we're also expecting a bit of a boost because you've had the heat wave, people staying on staycations, people like you, Ewan, who like the British sun.
Or sun in general, I think, was the general point of that. Look, lots to unpack there, and a really busy week for you, Lizzie, anyway. Lots of things to tell us about on Bloomberg Radio and television throughout the week as well. The question is how much more pressure will this put on the Tory leadership candidates? Will they come up with plans? Will there be bold policy ideas? The next hustings is in Perth in Scotland. Watching out to see what's being said about Scottish independence, perhaps, might come up in that event, and other local issues also. Likely to play into that element of the debate. Of course, we've got the hustings in Northern Ireland coming up later this week as well.
Yeah, my hunch is that those Tory leadership candidates will be saving up their plans for the beginning of September, when they actually take over and they announce with a big flourish plans to reduce energy prices, or at least to cap energy prices at a lower level than is already planned. But we'll see what happens with that in just over 3 weeks' time.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
Do you love Elon Musk? Do you hate Elon Musk? Do you have no idea what to think about Elon Musk? Then we have just the show for you.
He's become even more larger than life.
Buying Twitter doesn't get us closer to Mars.
They are like really close to the edge of like everything falling apart.
Like, oh, Elon, I volunteer, put a chip in my brain.
Each week on this podcast, we'll break down, analyze, and debate the most important stories on Musk and his empire.
It's all one big universe. You just work for Elon Inc.
From Bloomberg Businessweek, this is Elon Inc. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.